Inselmilkom u nilqakom għal program ieħor il-ħrejjef, l-erf u l-maġija. U tħaffer kemm tħaffer donnok floktaq ta' qalbek u tieqaf bil-kontra. Iktar ma jmur tinkoraġġixxi ruħek biex kompli u hekk ġrali bil-ħrejjef. Dawn li se nitkellmu dwarhom illum li jissejħu Native American Folk Tales huma vasti daqs l-istati li hemm f'dan il-kontinent Amerikan. U tara naqra x'kultura antika, indiġena għandu dan il-poplu, iżda donnu warraba u insija. Ir-risposta ta' dan qiegħda fit-tribujiet. Dawn it-tribujiet fil-fatt jissejħu Indjani Amerikani li jgħixu ġol Amerika għal eluf u koll miljuni ta' snin. Meta Christopher Columbus skopra l-Amerika, l-Indjani kienu meqsin bħala xkiel u tajt kemm minnhom ġew eliminati. Issa biex niskopru l-ewwel ħrejjef rridu mmorru lura fi żmien meta dawn l-Indjani kienu għadhom jirrenjaw, jikkaċċjaw u jokkupaw l-Amerika. Fost in-numru ma jispiċċa qatt ta' tribujiet insibu it-tribu ta' l-Iroquois li kienu jgħixu max-xmara St. Lawrence madwar il-Great Lakes. U fix-xlokk tal-Amerika. Id-dixendenti ta' dan it-tribu illum jgħixu ġo New York, Quebec u Ontario. Dawn in-nies huma magħrufin ukoll bħala Haudenosaunes li tfisser People of the Longhouse, in-nies tad-dar it-twila. Tradizzjonalment il-kanin keħaka magħrufin bħala l-Mohawk kienu l-gwardjani ta' dan ir-reġjun. Il-kelma Mohawk tfisser li kienu jieklu dak kollu li uħaj. Jissejħu wkoll kanin keħaġa People of the Place of the Flint, nies ta' żniet, u daw kienu jgħixu ġo Mohawk Valley, fejn illum tinsab il-Belt ta' New York, u it-territorju tagħhom kien jibqa' sejjer sa' Quebec u l-Vant ta' Ontario. Daw kienu jissejħu Keepers of the Eastern Door, u kienu jibblukkaw l-invażjonijiet li setgħu jgħeddu lill-indiġeni li kienu jiffurmaw parti mill-familja Iroquois. Jifformaw parti minn din il-familja kien hemm ukoll il-Cayuga, Oneida, Onondaga u t-tribu ta' Seneca. Nixtieq insemmalkom ħrafa li titratta propju dwar dan it-tribu. Imma jisima Vampire Hermit, għalhekk stennew li tkun xi daqsxejn makabra. Wara kollox l-indiġeni indjani kienu dilettanti ħafna tek sa taraw fil-fatt fil-programm tal-lum. She was nervous when her husband said they were to stay in the abandoned house, for it contained the corpse of the hermit who once lived there, enshrined in a coffin in the loft. It was an old custom, and one no longer popular among the Iroquois people, but the hermit had insisted upon it before his death. There was good hunting in this place, her man had declared, and so they moved in, and she unpacked their few belongings in the front room, refusing to go up into the loft where the hermit's body lay. When her husband left to hunt, she immediately put her daughter in the sling on her back and went to look for roots and berries, staying away until her husband returned with the meat. As she prepared the evening meal for them, her husband, tired from his hunting, climbed up into the loft to rest. The hut soon filled with the delicious smell of roasting meat. She was sorting through the berries when she heard a muffled cry and the crunch of breaking bones. As she stared upward, frozen in horror, blood started to drip from the rafters. She crept silently to the far corner of the room where she could see up into the loft. A skeleton with glowing red eye sockets was feasting on the body of her husband, its teeth and chin covered with blood. Her daughter stared restlessly at her back, and she knew that she had to get away immediately. "I'm going to run down to the stream to fetch water for the broth," she called toward the loft. "I will be right back." She took the pail and walked towards the stream, trying to appear normal. As soon as she was out of sight among the trees, she started to run as fast as she could. She heard a terrible howl from the direction of the house as the creature heard them escaping and started to pursue. The young mother stumbled desperately through the woods, the creature's howls growing closer as it pursued them. Her little daughter wailed in fright at her back as she fled in her terror, sobbing, and was almost without hope. The monster was gaining on her. In a last act of despair, she shouted the Iroquois distress cry, hoping someone would be near enough to hear it. Her call was taken up and answered by the warriors from the village. She could hear the creature breathing behind her as she sprinted to the trees at the edge of the village. Here, her strength failed her, and she collapsed to the ground. Just before the monster could pounce on them, a party of warriors burst through the gates of the village, chasing the skeleton away. They swung their torches wide, and the skeleton retreated further into the woods. The warriors chased the creature back to the hermit's house and set fire to the cabin. As the flames encompassed the house, a terrible howling and roaring came from the loft, and the vampire hermit fled into the woods in the form of a rabbit, never again to plague the young woman or her daughter. I tribut al krej jiffurmaw parti mill-familja ta' Agonikwian li kienu jokkupaw l-ikbar territorju. Il-krej kienu jgħixu ġo Manitoba u Assiniboine bejn Xmara Red u Xmara Saskatchewan. Isimgħu kemm hija interessanti din ir-rafa fejn propju tissemma din ix-xmara u jissemmew ukoll it-tribu tal-krej. A Saskatchewan ghost story. By the time he finished his daily tasks, the light was failing, but everything he needed to accomplish before he made the journey to visit his betrothed was complete. He was eager to see his love, so he set out immediately, in spite of the growing darkness. He would paddle his canoe through the night and be with his beloved come the dawn. The river sank softly to itself under the clear night sky. He glanced up through the trees, identifying certain favorite stars and chanting softly to himself, his thoughts all of her. Suddenly he heard his name called out. He jerked back to awareness, halting his paddling and allowing the canoe to drift as he searched for the speaker. "Who calls?" he asked in his native tongue, and then repeated the words in French, "Qui appelle?" There was no response. Deciding that he had imagined the incident, he took up his paddle and continued down the dark, murmuring rivers. A few moments later, he heard his name spoken again. It came from everywhere and from nowhere, and something about the sound reminded him of his beloved. But of course, she could not be here in this empty place along the river. She was at home with her family. "Who calls?" he asked in his native tongue, and then repeated the words in French, "Qui appelle?" His words echoed back to him from the surrounding valley, echoing and reverberating. The sound faded away, and he listened intently, but there was no response. The breeze swirled around him, touching his hair and his face. For a moment, the touch was that of his beloved, his fair one, and he closed his eyes and breathed deep of the perfumed air. Almost he thought he heard her voice in his ear, whispering his name. Then the breeze died away, and he took up his paddle and continued his journey to the home of his love. He arrived at dawn and was met by his beloved father. One look at the old warrior's face told him what had happened. His beloved, his fair one, was gone. She had died during the night while he was journeying to her side. Her last words had been his name, uttered twice, just before she breathed her last. He fell on his knees, weeping like a small child. Around him the wind rose softly and swirled through his hair, across his cheek, as gentle as a touch. In his memory he heard his beloved's voice calling to him in the night. Finally he rose, took the old warrior's arm, and helped him back to his home. To this day, travelers on the Qui Appelle River can still hear the echo of the Cree warrior's voice as he reaches out to the spirit of his beloved, crying, "Qui appelle? Who calls?" L-Indjani Sioux li oriġinaw mill-Messiku kienu jgħixu mill-punent tal-Mississippi sar-Rocky Mountains. Min jaf kemm minnhom inqatlu minħabba li kienu jiġu attakkati mit-tribù tal-Iroqua. Għalkemm illum għad baqa mal-40,000 mit-tribù tas-Sioux, mit-tribù tal-Iroqua għad baqa biss 14,000. Se nsemmalkom ħrafa fejn jissemmew kemm is-Sioux kif ukoll l-Krej. Tistgħu timmaġinaw dwar xiex titratta din il-ħrafa li hemm żewġ tribujiet. Iżda għalkemm hemm ukoll ħirsa fiha laqta kemm xejn nostalġika u forsi romantika. Mela ejjew nisimgħuha A Manitoba Ghost. A Cree chief had a very beautiful daughter who was sought after by many brave warriors. There were two suitors who led the rivalry for her hand, a Cree chief from Lake Winnipegosis and a Sioux chief from Devil's Lake. The girl herself favored the Cree warrior, and when he brought a beautiful white horse from Mexico as a gift for her father, the man agreed to the marriage. The Sioux chief was enraged by the rejection of his suit. On the day of the wedding, he gathered the war party and came thundering across the plains towards the home of the beautiful maiden. The Cree chief tossed his lovely bride on top of the white horse and leapt upon his own gray steed. The couple fled to the west with the rejected Sioux and his war party on their heels. The canny Cree chief doubled back several times, and the couple hid among the prairie bluffs. For a time it seemed as if they had lost the Sioux, but once they were on the plains again, the beautiful white horse was visible for miles, and the war party soon found them. A rain of arrows fell upon the fleeing lovers, and the warrior and his bride fell dead from their mounts. At once the Sioux captured the gray steed, but the white horse evaded them. One man claimed he saw the spirit of the young bride enter into the horse just before it fled from their clutches. The white horse roamed the prairies for many years, following the death of the Cree warrior and his lovely bride. The inhabitants feared to approach the horse, since the spirit of the maiden dwelled within it. Long after its physical body passed away, the soul of the white horse continued to gallop across the plains, and the land where it roamed became known as the White Horse Plain. They say that the soul of the white horse continues to haunt the prairie to this very day. A statue of the white horse was erected at San Francois Javier on the Trans-Canada Highway west of Winnipeg, to remind all who see it of the phantom white horse and the beautiful maiden who once rode it. Tribu ieħor blisem ta' Ngāti Kongs kienu jiffurmaw parti mill-klan tal-Lenni Lenape u li kienu jgħixu fejn illum hemm New Jersey. Kienu jgħixu ġol-wiet ta' Lake Hapatkong u x'mara Styx. L-ewwel sajjieda u bdiewa ġo din iż-żona kienu tribu ta' Ngāti Kongs sakemm fl-1700 waslu l-Olandiżi u dan it-tribu kellu jitlaq. Fil-fatt ħafna mit-tribujiet sfaxxaw, jew minħabba li l-bojot ħadulhom l-artijiet. Jew minħabba l-mart li ġabu magħhom. Ħafna tribujiet ġew meqrudin ukoll f'massakri jew fi gwerer. Kien hemm ħafna u ħafna iktar tribujiet bħal l-Apache, Arapaho, il Blackfoot, il Cherokee, il Cheyenne, il Comanche, il Crow, il Navajo, il Poné, il Shoshone, il Wabanaki u l'Anishabi. Xira li nisimaw issa ħrafa dwar it-tribu ta' Narity Kongs u dwar wieħed mill-mexxija tagħhom, Chief Kwakwahela u l-famuż Ors Amerikan. U jisima' Spirit Lodge. The great chief, Kwakwahela, lived in peace with his people on the banks of the River Styx, where it entered the lake waters. Their lives were busy and full. The warriors hunted and fished, the women cooked and cared for the old and the young, and all lived in peace with the natural world around them. Kwakwahela determined one day to visit with a tribe far to the south of their village. He set out at dusk, paddling across the lake, and then walking inland towards the lodge of a friend, where he would spend a night before resuming his journey. He had gone only a few yards from the lake shore when he heard a terrible snarling, and a huge bear came bursting forth out of the bushes nearby. Kwakwahela was well armed with his war club and his hunting gear, but the bear was his totem, and so it was forbidden for him to kill the creature. Thus he fled back towards his canoe, intent on escape. But the enraged bear threw itself forward and knocked him to the ground. Desperate now, Kwakwahela wrestled with the bear, beating it repeatedly with his war club, trying to drive it off. Blood stained the ground from many wounds as the bear fought with the mighty chief. At last the chief drew his knife and stabbed the bear repeatedly around the head and throat until it released him with a final blood-chilling growl. Kwakwahela crawled away from the bear and collapsed on the ground. His body was torn and broken, his wounds grievous. He turned himself over with great effort and looked towards the enemy, his totem. The bear was dead. With a moan of contrition and despair, Kwakwahela's head fell back to the earth as he succumbed to his injuries. He died a moment later. The friend of the great chief, not knowing of his intent to stay with him, did not know anything was amiss until 2 days later, when he discovered the body of a great bear lying near the lake. The chief's canoe was beached nearby, and Kwakwahela's bloody war club and totem and knife told a grisly story. Of the chief's body there was no sign, but wolves' tracks suggested that his friend had been dragged away by the local pack. Kwakwahela's friend summoned more warriors, and they searched for the remains of the chief for many days, but it was never recovered. About a month later, on the night of the full moon, Kwakwahela's clan saw a strange mist spiraling up the side of a nearby hill like the smoke from a fire. The conditions were clear and the night bright as day, yet the strange mist solidified before their eyes and stayed unmoving in that one location, in spite of the strong wind that sprang up and rustled the trees around it. The clan was mystified by the strange apparition, and wondered why it had appeared to them. That night, the great chief Kwakwahela appeared in a vision to his medicine man.
"It is I," he told the man, "who have appeared in the mist on the hillside. I have killed the great bear who took my life, and so am barred forever from entering the spirit realm. Rather than roam the earth, I have determined to stay near my clansmen, and so have erected a spirit lodge on the hillside in the place which you saw tonight."
The great chief promised the medicine man that he would accompany his people on all their expeditions, ensuring their safe leaving and returning. If they ever doubted his presence, all they must do was look to the hillside. The mist that had gathered in that one place was the smoke from his spirit lodge ascending to the treetops. Thus they would be reassured of his spirit eternally dwelling with them, and if they ever called over to him, he would answer them. The medicine man conveyed the words of his spirit chief to the clansmen the next morning. There was much joy in the knowledge that their beloved Kwakwahela was still among them. Many of the people whooped and shouted towards the hillside where he made his spirit lodge, and always a reply would echo back to them. Thus was confirmed the vision of the medicine man. To this day, the spiraling, misty smoke from Kwakwahela's spirit lodge may be seen rising above the hillside in damp or wet weather, and anyone giving a friendly shout to the great chief will hear his voice echoing in reply. Uġala darba b'dejna bl-ħirsa, tajjeb il-wieħed jeżamina x'kienu dawn l-ispirti u l-ħirsa. Iċ-ċib l-laħk li ma' żmien imbagħad xi magħruf bħala ċebolok kien spirtu li hu forma ta' kokka perikoluża ħafna. L-għajta ta' din il-kokka twerwer u jidru biss ir-ras u d-dwiefer. U din l-idea ta' iħirsa u spirti bl-irjuż biss hija komuni f'din il-kultura indiġena. L-Iroqua jemnu li dawn huma rjus ta' mostri li jew itiru jew jirrumblaw mal-art. U din ġeneralment tiġi kreata meta raġel joqtol lill-martu li tkun bidlitu ma' raġel ieħor. U dawn in-nies kienu jħobbuh il-makabru. Għaliex ir-raġel kien jitma l-itfal ġisem l-om. Jew ir-raġel jitma l-mara ġisem dak li kella l-infedeltà miegħu. Stennax, ma spiċċaċ hawn l-istorja, imbagħad joqtolha. U din ir-ras kienet qum propju mill-qabar ta' din il-mara. U din ir-ras tkompli twerwer lir-raġel li jkun qatel lill-familja tiegħu u lill-ġirien. Inkredibbli kif kienu jsibu tarf l-infedeltà, però innutaw. Da kien jiġri biss jekk il-mara tibdel ir-raġel, ir-raġel probabbli seta' jkollu nisa kemm irid. Palissa qiegħda naħseb, forsi xi ħaġa daqsxejn komika din li ma ħanajda. Li kieku għadha teżisti dik ir-ras illum, kieku jkollna naħseb jiena villaġġi sħaħ imwerwrin. Qed niċċajta, eh? Xira issa li nisimgħu ħrafa dwar dan l-ispirtu daqshekk makabru. The Rolling Head. In a solitary tent lived a lone family, a man, his wife, and two children. When the man went out hunting, he always painted his wife's face and body before he started in the morning. His wife went for water to a lake nearby. She always went to the same place, and when she came to the lake, she took off her clothes as if to bathe. Then a large snake rose out of the lake, after the woman had spoken to it and told it to appear. The snake asked her to come out to him, since her husband had gone away hunting. The woman did as the snake said. Every morning she went to the lake. Her husband brought back meat, and she and the children were glad. The man did not know what happened. He did not know that his wife went to the lake and met a large snake. But one day he asked her what made the paint come off her. She said that she took a bath. Next morning he started as if to hunt, but dug a hiding place near the lake to see what his wife did. She came to the shore and called to the snake, "Come, I'm waiting." Then he saw a big old snake rise from the water and ask her if her husband had gone hunting. She answered, "Yes, I'm coming." She took off her clothes and entered the lake, and the snake was soon around her. The man had watched them, and now, leaving his hiding place, he jumped on the snake and with a large knife cut it in pieces, and at last killed it. Then he caught his wife and killed her. He cut her up and took her meat home and gave it to his children. He cooked his wife and the children unknowingly at their mother. Then the man said to them, "Tell your mother when she comes home that I went to get more meat, which I left hanging on a tree, so that the wolves cannot reach it." And he went away. The younger child said, "Our mother is merely teasing us by staying away." But the older girl answered, "Do not say anything against our mother." Then their mother's head came rolling to them, and it said, "I am very sorry that my children have eaten me up." The two children ran away, but the head pursued them. At last they were worn out, but their mother's head still rolled after them. Then the older girl drew a line or mark on the ground, and such a deep hole opened that the head could not cross it. The younger girl was very hungry. She said to her sister, "Look at that deer." The older girl looked at the deer, and it fell down dead, as if shot. So they ate it. Then someone was kind to them and helped them, and they lived in a large lodge, and had much food of various kinds to eat. Two large panthers and two large black bears guarded them against all wild animals and persons. A camp of people was starving. Neither buffalo nor small game could be found. The people heard that the children had abundance of food of all kinds, and they all moved to them. When they arrived, the children invited them, and the various companies came and ate with them. Finally, they all went out again. Only the children's father now stayed with them again. But they regretted what he had done to them, so they caused the lions to jump upon their father, and he was killed. Xira illi fil-programm li jmiss inkomplu nesploraw din il-kultura indiġena Amerikana biex niskopru aktar ħrejjef dwar spirti, iħirsa, annimali kurjużi u little people u taraw kemm huma differenti minn dawk l-elves u fairies u gnomes illi imdorrin bihom fil-kultura Oċċidentali. Sa tant, jiena Magrita Juice insemmilkom.